But we're going to start back at chapter 17. Okay, now the Philistines, I'm going to have to start earlier than that. In fact, we're probably not even going to be able to finish this tonight. Okay. let's start at verse 15. Chapter 15. Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore listen to the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of horses, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him on the way while he was coming up from Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek and utterly destroy all that he has, and don't spare him, but put to death both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, and camel and donkey. The reason for this is because the extreme immorality and spiritual depravity of the whole peoples." Saul summoned the people and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers, 10,000 men of Judah. Saul came to the city of Amalek, set an ambush in the valley. Saul said to the Kenites, "Go, depart, go down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them, for you showed kindness to all the sons of Israel, and they came up from Egypt." So the Kenites departed from them from among the Amalekites. And there's a story in itself that's quite unique about the Kenites. But he rescued them from the Amalekites. So Saul defeated the Amalekites from Havilah as you go to Shur, which is east of Egypt. He captured Agag, the king, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were not willing to destroy them utterly. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed. So God's instructions were, hey, wipe them all out, totally. But Saul chose not only to spare the king, but also to spare all these animals. Maybe we can call him an environmentalist wacko. Verse 10, "Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel, saying, I regret that I have made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and has not carried out my commands. And Samuel was distressed, cried out to the Lord all night long. Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, and it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel. Behold, he set up a monument for himself, then turned and proceeded on down to Gilgal. Samuel came to Saul. Saul said to him, Blessed are you of Yahweh, I have carried out the command of the Lord. But Samuel said, Well, what then is this hearing in my ears? I hear a whole bunch of sheep bleating. And I hear a whole bunch of oxen lowing. What is this I hear? Saul said, Oh, well, they have brought them up from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and oxen to sacrifice to Yahweh, your God. Not my God, not the God, your God. But the rest we have utterly destroyed. And you can almost imagine him saying, just as we were told to do. Then Samuel said to Saul, Wait, and let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night. And he said to him, Oh, speak, please tell me what the Lord said to you last night. Samuel said, Is it not true, though you were little in your own eyes, you were made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed you king over Israel? And the Lord sent you on a mission and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are exterminated. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord, but rushed upon the spoil and did what was evil in the sight of the Lord? Then Saul said to Samuel, I did obey the voice of the Lord. I did. I did not have sex with that woman. That's not out of context, okay? Here's the king saying, no, I didn't do that. Someone says, yes, you did. Someone says, I didn't do that. Here's a different vocabulary, different understanding, different standards. I did obey the voice of the Lord and went on the mission on which the Lord sent me. Oh, and I have brought back Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. This is pride on Saul's part. This is creature arrogance. This is independence from God, setting up his own standards above God's, setting up above his own idea above God's command. Verse 21. But the people took some of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the choicest of the things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God at Gilgal. He thinks he did right, but the people messed up. See, the people blew it. They didn't do what they were supposed to do. And hey, it's not my fault. I'm just the king. Verse 22, Samuel said, has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. Oh, so you want to sacrifice these animals. I did not ask for those sacrifices. I asked for those animals to be destroyed. And it is more important that you obey my voice than that you sacrifice and sacrifice and sacrifice multitudes of animals. I don't care if you're sacrificing them to me or not. I don't care if you're portraying the salvation of the Lord through animal sacrifice. I did not request that. I requested quite the opposite, that those animals not be saved, but totally destroyed. Verse 23, for rebellion is as the sin of divination, and insubordination is as iniquity and idolatry. Here he's Samuel, through the Lord, is accusing Saul of rebellion. And he's saying it's just as bad as involving yourself with the occult. The sin of divination is involving yourself with the occult. And it's interesting because that's exactly what Saul's going to do later, is get involved with the occult and seek after witches. Insubordination. Insubordination is subversion. The word in the Hebrew means to push or to press against. And so you're insubordinate to someone, you're pushing against their authority, you're rejecting their authority. And it is as iniquity and idolatry. Iniquity here is the word that means affliction. So he's saying that this insubordination is affliction to others. And it's idolatry. Why is it idolatry? Because you are basically placing yourself in an authority over God instead of God and displacing him, putting somebody in the place of God. That's what idolatry is. Idolatry is putting anything or anyone in the place of God, including yourself. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. That's it, Saul. Last straw. Verse 24, Saul feels a little bit of pressure now. I'm in trouble. So he said to Samuel, I have sinned. Now it's going to be seen that this is a false confession. I have indeed transgressed the command of the Lord and your words. Because I feared the people and listen to their voice. This is my excuse. Isn't it justified? Now, therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may worship the Lord. Saul is so far out of kilter, spiritually speaking, it's pitiful. What Samuel thinks and does about Saul's sin is absolutely no issue. See, he's confessing to Samuel. He's saying, Samuel, pardon my sin. He should be talking to God. He should be dealing with God. He's trying to get right with Samuel. Samuel sees right through it. Verse 26, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned to go, Saul seized the edge of his robe, and it tore. Samuel said to him, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to your neighbor who is better than you. There is the seed that is going to sprout into one of the most serious examples of jealousy in the entire Bible. God's going to take the kingdom from you and give it to somebody else who is better than you. And also, the glory of Israel will not lie or change his mind, for he is not a man that he should change his mind. In other words, this is it. We're not going to go back on this. He's not going to change his mind tomorrow. He's not going to come back and say, it's okay, Saul. You can keep the kingdom. Then he said, I have sinned. But please honor me now before the elders of my people and before Israel and go back with me that I may worship the Lord your God. He's more concerned about his personal image here. See it? Oh, I've sinned, but honor me now before the elders and my people and before Israel. Come back with me. Put your arm around me. Let everybody know that everything's okay. But Samuel still went back with him in verse 31. Samuel went back following Saul. Notice, following Saul. Didn't go back together with him. Interesting words. And Saul worshipped the Lord. However, this is going to be demonstrated later on in the life of Saul that this is false worship at this time. It's a human viewpoint zeal, an empty religious zeal that is not honoring to God, and he does some very serious things. Verse 32, Samuel said, bring me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came to him cheerfully. Poor guy. Agag said, surely the bitterness of death is past. Samuel said, as your sword has made women childless, so shall your mother be childless among women. And Samuel hewed Agag to pieces before the Lord at Gilgal. Kind of popped his balloon. Then Samuel went to Ramah, but Saul went up to his house at Gibeah of Saul. Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death. For Samuel grieved over Saul, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. Now what's interesting is when it says Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death, that was many, many, many days after Samuel had died. When Samuel was sent back by the Lord to visit Saul and once again confirmed to him that he was being rejected by God. In fact, Samuel said, today you're going to die. So Saul, after his death, came back. And the story of that is interesting. I'm not going to go into the details because it could be confusing since a witch was involved with this, which also contributed to the indictment on Saul. But that's when that is fulfilled. Samuel had died, but Samuel still sees Saul on the day of his death. Okay. verse 1 of chapter 16. Now the Lord said to Samuel, How long will you grieve over Saul? So Samuel's upset. Samuel's a little bit saddened by this. Since I have rejected him from being king over Israel, fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king for myself among his sons. And Samuel said, how can I go? When Saul hears of it, he will kill me. And the Lord said, take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. So verse 2 is interesting, isn't it? God says, Samuel, go to Jesse, find among his sons someone who's going to be king. Samuel says, Lord, if I do that, Saul's going to hear about it. He's going to kill me. He's going to cut me down. So God said, well, why don't you just make it a worship occasion? Go take some animals and go and worship. Saul won't think anything of it. Samuel says, oh, that's a good idea. So he does it. Verse 3, you shall invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I designate to you. So Samuel did what the Lord said, came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came trembling to meet him and said, do you come in peace? And he said, in peace, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. See, these guys were afraid of Samuel because he cut Saul down. And everyone knew that Saul was out of it now, although he was still king at the present time. But he was on his way out. Middle of verse 5, he also consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. Then it came about when they entered that he looked at Eliab and thought. Eliab was the oldest. Eliab was a warrior. Eliab was a valiant warrior. And Samuel saw him and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Sure, this is the one. This is the one who's going to be king. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So if it was left up to Samuel, he would have chose the warrior. He would have chose the military man. But God says, don't look at just the way he looks on the outside. You got to go deeper. You got to look on the inside. That's why I've sent you, and that's why I'm going to choose the man, because you can't look on the inside. I can look on the inside, and I'm going to find a man after my own heart. I'm going to find a man who is in fellowship with me, who has spiritual and moral integrity. Okay. And then we have some other sons passing before Samuel, and he checks them all out and so forth, and finally he chooses one of them. But I'm a little bit over. I don't want to go much past 45, 50 minutes on our classes anymore. That's about the best we can do. It may interrupt some of our subject matter a little bit, but to finish this, I'm going to have to go much longer. So we will stop there. Next Monday, we'll pick up here. We're going to develop this further. You can read it on your own, of course, if you want to. It's not a homework assignment. I am not authorized to give you homework assignments. But remember what I told you about the seed pod of jealousy that was sown. When Samuel told Saul that God was going to choose someone who was better than you. Isn't that what jealousy is around? See? Thinking that somebody is better or getting more attention. And this is the beginning process here. God's going to choose somebody, and this person, from the outset, is better than Saul. And going to demonstrate himself consistently better than Saul, spiritually and morally. So that's where we'll pick up next time.